Yes. This talk will be very pragmatic and yet very close to the previous talk, which was very abstract, at least to me. The main idea is that try what you can and use what works. In this sense, actually, this is one of the reasons why we are working also in CCM. There was this question. The characteristic code is a robust code with its own limitations. It's unable to handle caustics. So why don't we try to use that? And this is the very simple reason for trying to match to it. When one tries to match boundaries of two different codes, you want to make sure that both codes are able to handle boundary conditions. We have tried, and the characteristic code has no problems in evolving stably when you specify boundary conditions freely on a time like Vertube. One cannot say the same thing about the 3+1 set of equations I was using, which I will show in a minute. So basically, I will talk about what to do to make this 3+1 code work. Let's first make it clear and clean what are we trying to talk about. Equations are linearized. I will call this the York equations. Some other people call it AVM equations in the case of lambda equals zero with the slicing given here, geodesic. Constraints, the notations for the constraints will be C and the CI, being the time components of the Einstein tensor. Evolution is unconstrained, and this parameter lambda allows one mixing the Hamiltonian constraint into the evolution equations. I think this might be exactly what Mijan was talking about in the morning, except that he had a fixed value for this parameter I call lambda. Lambda equals minus 1 would correspond to the linearized Einstein equations, and 0 would be York or ADM or CAR, whatever you want, is the quote-unquote standard 3+1 equations, the G dot equals KK dot equals R system that I'm using. Something I believe very well known is wherever the evolution equations are satisfied, the Hamiltonian constraint will propagate with this according to this equation. The reason I'm saying wherever is that in numerics you are using your evolution equations everywhere except at the boundary. So in the evolution grid points, the Hamiltonian constraint behaves like a scalar wave. The question is, what does it do at the boundary? Does it blow on you? Does it exponentiate? Or are you putting the right condition on it? The speed of this quantity, C, will be square root of 1 plus lambda, which means that you have to have lambda at least minus 1. There is a paper by Fritelli which is saying that it should not be minus 1 for numerical evolution. It should be bigger so that you have a positive non-zero speed for the Hamiltonian constraint. So the first, the next slides will be talking about numerics, trying to do things simple. Evolution schemes are in space first order than time. Again, this is G dot equals K, K dot equals R. R is a combination of second derivatives of the metric everywhere with a space-like indices. Evolution schemes, we have used LF, non-staggered. LF2 is staggered in time, leapfrog, and ICN is iterative Crank-Nicolson. We use two iterations in each of our experiments with these ratios, dt over dx. The final differencing formulas were written down up to second order in delta square. Sometimes at boundaries I have computed quantities, and those were done with 3-point sideways finite difference formula so that I had the same accuracy. Now, the next thing is maybe very far apart from rigorous mathematic definition. Let's define what I mean by a stable code. Do the following. Take 48 grid points. Run the code for 2,000 crossing times, which for this many, for dt over dx equals a quarter is this many iterations. choose random initial data, which means that you put in constraint violation into your initial data, and you study what the constraint violating modes are doing, and you choose random boundary data. This is something we have found much more efficient in diagnosing instabilities. Your code will blow much quicker with random boundary data than it does with smooth zero or whatever else boundary data. Now, we call a code stable if the Hamiltonian constraint violation C shows no exponential growth with respect to time for the 2,000 crossing times run. If it blows, if it exponentiates, then I call it unstable and I will not use the system. Again, this is a very empiric thing, and many of the experiments were done without being able to predict whether things will work or not. Let's talk about periodic boundary conditions first to see whether the system without boundaries is able to handle the test we are imposing to it. If it will not work with periodic boundary conditions, boundary will not fix it. So the topology has three totals, periodic boundary conditions in each direction, and we were checking the equations with respect to this parameter lambda. For leapfrog, it seems to be that the stability domain is in between 0 and 4. Remember that this paper by Fritelli was saying that it must be bigger than minus 1, so it is obeying that law of mathematics, yet it is saying a little bit more, and it's not clear to me whether it's mathematical or it's finite differencing, the reason which doesn't allow this lambda to be in between 0 and minus 1. And I will not speculate on that, at least not here. Since lambda equals 0 is the famous case which has been implemented in many of the 3 plus 1 systems, I was doing a study around the 0 with so many experiments, and it seems to be that as you increase the velocity of the Hamiltonian constraint, it will spread out through your grid quicker and quicker, which means that it will stop from the linear growth that you see at lambda equals 0. I have tried it with minus this much, and I got a slow exponential growth. So lambda equals 0, at least numerically, seems to be at the edge of blowing. And yet it is stable. It's the last stable point I was able to find. It might suggest that you don't want to use this system with lambda equals 0 if you want to run something. Problem is it might change the... it changes your characteristics, and then you have problems with the excision. So there could be arguments for and against using lambda anywhere between this range. The higher value seems to be a CFL condition problem. We're saying that the bigger the lambda, the faster the Hamiltonian constraint propagates. And we know that the condition is that your numerical velocity has to be bigger than the physical velocities. And actually, I have tried to decrease the time step, and then this lambda could be higher than... So that seems to be related. This is the Hamiltonian constraint, the L infinity norm of the Hamiltonian constraint against time. Here I am running it only.
Are you normalizing it? In what units?
It's I should say that my initial data is order 10 to the minus 6 random numbers, and then without any further renormalization, this is the Hamiltonian constraint. I was saying that in linear theory you don't care for.
I think the work is asking.
No, it's not. It is the Hamiltonian constraint without any renormalization. Maybe I should have. I was saying that linear theory doesn't care for over a constant, so why should I bother with that?
You're saying that with data that is order 10 to the minus 6, the Hamiltonian constraint is order 10 for lambda?
It could be, yes.
But what was your differentiation error? That is for a.
The grid goes from 0 to 1. That's, again, something I should say. The 48 months, yes. Yes. Next, let's talk about ICN. it is different than leapfrog. Remember the linear growth here, lambda equals 0, 2, and 4 will decrease exponentially. Lambda equals minus 1, the linear Einstein equation seems to be an additional stability point. Anywhere around that, it seems to blow. And Einstein equations grow linearly, the Hamiltonian constraints. The other equations will make it decay exponentially. Possible reason for this different behavior is the dissipation, which is in the evolution algorithm. I have not put in any dissipation by hand, but I see and that's a dissipation in it, especially because I'm doing no more than two iterations. And here, what you see is scalar wave equation, Einstein, leapfrog LF1 and LF2, a plane wave which is running towards the corner of the cube, goes around 1,000 crossing times and measure how much the amplitude decreases. For ICN, it goes down by a little bit more than 20%, which is not bad, but it is different than LF1 and LF2. This might explain why ICN gave a different behavior for the Hamiltonian constraint than the leapfrog methods. Let's try to put boundaries into the game. Because that's, I think, one of the main issues in many of the codes that we have. So you want to put a boundary which has a simple shape, because we are doing finite differencing, and in finite differencing, shapes mean grid points that are situated in various positions. Let's keep the x and y directions periodic and put data on the z equals constant planes of the cube. See what happens. Now, specifying all components freely makes the Hamiltonian constraint grow exponentially in order of 10 crossing times. I believe this is not a big surprise for any of us. Actually, we just heard a talk saying that you should not do that. So here I was doing what one should not do, even though that was for a different system. By free, I mean random. The tree metric. It's the metric of the time-like slice that you... We are doing the slicing, a 3 plus 1 slicing. Sorry. Yeah, here I'm working only with the perturbation around Minkowski. I'm sorry, I should have said these things. Yes. So we have an argument which Jeff Winokur came up with recently, at least as much as I know, why things happen like I just said. Why is it that bad to specify freely six metric components on a boundary of this particular system? Let's look at this quantity, psi. Now, people who know more than I do say that the evolution equations will imply that this quantity psi will evolve according to the wave equation. Now, if you specify, let's talk about reflecting boundary conditions, which means that you set everything to zero. If that doesn't work, random conditions will not work either. Putting HRJ zero at the boundary means that psi will be zero. On the other side, one of the equations is saying, the derivative of the equations is saying that the z derivative of psi is determined by this quantity here, which, again, if you set h at the boundary to be 0, then this must be 0 also. So basically what you have is a wave equation for which you set the value of the function and its normal derivative to a sum 0, at this point to 0. And that is the classical example of ill-posedness. So basically setting h of getting an ill-posed problem. Setting HRJ equals 0, then experimentally and analytically, I can say, gives rise to an inconsistent boundary condition. Talking about the full nonlinear theory, this must imply that in that case, one should not specify all six metric functions freely. Even if you do it analytically, your code will generate some errors and it will depart from the original analytic solution that you're trying to specify at the boundary. So this, I think, is something that we have not realized before. To me, it was something new. Next, let's see then what can one do. And I will put back my previous slide. The alternative is you scratch your hand, your head, you try to pull out all the physics you know. And one possibility for this particular setup with z equal constant boundary is to specify at this boundary that transless trace-free mode freely, which means that you give only the xx minus yy and the xy component freely. And then you try to determine the missing four quantities by whichever way you can, such that you don't get an exponential growth. Now, to determine the set of equations that will not get you an exponential growth, the procedure is the following. You scratch your hand, you write down the equations you can think of which contain the quantities that you have. You try to combine them together that you think it makes sense, and then you try and see what happens. Again, this is just heuristics. In this slicing and in the linear theory, the GZ equation has a very nice feature. It will give you a very easy equation for evolving the two trace of the metric that you have. So basically, using this equation will give you the xx, xy, and the xy components of the metric on the z equal constant slice. Now, yes. On the ZA by A, or by these capitalized letters, I mean angular or X and Y components. To compute the ZA components, one can use either the corresponding components of the momentum constraint, which will look like this. You can combine it with the RTT, and then you get this equation. And as an alternative, you can simply use the ZA components of the Einstein tensor, which will have this form. To compute HZZ, we have come up with these two equations. So there might be more, and there might be more systems which will work. This slide is not trying to be exclusive. Now, the system 6 plus 7 plus 11, to me, didn't work. It seemed to be that the equations are beating each other and who is determining whom, so I did not spend much time with it. That leaves me with five remaining systems. The question is, are these any good to provide you the four missing quantities when you provide two of the six metric components at the boundary? A means X and Y. So let's try it first with LeapFrog, because it's more time efficient. It runs quicker. And now it blows. The constraints are applied on K, on the derivative of the metric, by the way. For lambda equals 0, it blows right ahead. Lambda equals 4, it goes for 1,000 crossing times before it would begin a slow growth. So this was very promising, that we must be doing something which is better than specifying all the six components. Yet we haven't been able to get rid of this exponential growth before changing the evolution algorithm to ICN, for which we have obtained that all five systems work. Basically, system five is the one which is using the GZZ, the GZX, and the GZY, and some other equation. Remember that the boundary is at z equal constant, so it might make sense to talk about the components of the Einstein tensor that have one leg z. But the good news is that we got five systems which show nothing like what you get if you specify all six components. And now the next problem you want to solve is you want to close your cube. You want to put data on all of the faces, because that's what Mijan and Luis is willing to have. And so we have tried that as well. So let's try to run our cube. On the faces, we use system 5, which was better. Actually, it gave a decaying exponential a decaying Hamiltonian constraint. On the edges, let me make a small graph. So let's say that I have an edge here, and this is the z-axis. Now this means that here I will have the x and y. So then this is x equal constant. Then I have the h x z, and then I have the h x x and the h z z. This is on this face. On this face, I have h y z and h y y minus h z z. So on this edge, I can assume that I have h y z, I have h x z, and I have these other two quantities as well. So I have four quantities. I need only two equations to complete the information needed as boundary data. And so what we do there is RTT is a very simple equation that keeps the trace of the h constant. So I can use that to compute the missing, to compute all the diagonal elements of the metric. And then the other thing I'm using is gxy and this edge, which again, one could argue that it might make physically sense. I don't know why it works. It seems to work. One good feature of that equation is that it has second spatial derivatives only along the z-axis, so I don't have to do sideways second derivatives, and that made me particularly very happy for at least a few days. Now, you want to try this and see how the Hamiltonian constraint behaves, and it does behave. We have tried this with lambda equals 0, 2, and 4. I should have said the previous slide was for lambda equals 2. But two of the systems we have tried with zero, lambda equals 0 as well. And so it seems to work. It is a little bit glitchier. I must say also that in the corners, basically you have five linearly independent pieces of information. For in this face, you have the hxy and the hxx minus hyy. So basically, at this point, you have all the non-diagonal components. Now, the diagonal information is linearly related, so you must use an equation to get one more piece of information, and that is, again, the RTT. And in this way, you compute the missing piece of information at the corner. Yes. So here, basically, I should have said everywhere h dots or k's. I'm sorry for the constraint equations are implemented so that they constrain the k equals h dot.
Now, what you're specifying is
geometry of
the boundary.
I'm giving the extrinsic curvature of the. I'm giving krj equals h dot rj as boundary.
Rj
goes from 1 to 3. A, X, and Y, and Z. That's what I'm specifying as boundary data on a given face. Is the transverse traces component, which is two pieces of information. And I'm using four constraints on the faces to compute the missing four quantities. Yes, let's go back a little bit. Evolution equations, hrj dot equals krj up to some factors and sine. Krj dot equals Rij, again up to some factors and signs. Rij is second derivatives of Hij, spatial derivatives. Now, if I know K at the boundary, again it's numerics, then I can compute H at the boundary. if I know H at the boundary, I can compute R at the point next to the boundary, because I have to take sideways finite differencing. So if I have, if this is my boundary data, I can compute R at this point. With evolution equation, I can I can compute it here, and then I can evolve and compute this point at this point Kij. And but I need to specify here the missing data point. And here I need to give all the six functions, kxs, kxy, kxz, and so on. Am I confusing you further, or? No. No, to get the metric of the surface, the GZZ equation will provide me the two trace of the boundary metric. The what I call the two trace is HXX plus HYY for the Z equal constant surface.
You are specifying the
the KXX and the KY. I keep.
Here's the problem. There is a dot implicit everywhere.
Yes, yes. Yes, I am confusing. Yes, yes. I should have written all my equations in terms of K, and that maybe. Except that you are not taking. If you take a derivative of your equations, then yes. But I'm not doing that. Maybe I could have done that, and then I would evolve k and k dot. But then that would be one further step of sine derivatism. So have I cleared a little bit your question? I'm sorry for confusing the people. So this is the cube. We could say that in linearized theory, with this particular slicing, we do know how to give data on the faces, edges, and corners of a cube, which is, again, something it was new for me. I don't know yet how to do a sphere. The reason I want to do a sphere is that I want to do CCM. We want to do CCM in a Cartesian grid, a sphere looks not very nice. It will have all these little corners and edges and all those things. On a corner, when I was doing the cube, I was specifying five free functions. Now, if I do this sphere out of the Cartesian grid points, then most of the points will be corners. And it makes no sense to give five free functions on an almost sphere. And so this approach does not work. I have tried it. Another approach is you do define a sphere, and then you do interpolation in between your sphere and the Cartesian points. That is more involved, because interpolation is always introducing an extra level of a finite differencing error. On the other side, the constraints in spherical coordinates look different, so it's more work to do. I will not promise that I will have this thing working next week, but we hope that it will work at Sunday. If there's any questions. Yes?
Perhaps more to the audience. So I'm intrigued that you actually do something special, like the edges and the points. Is it right if somebody else would be just sort of blending things between the two spaces, get an edge, and then between the edges, get an edge?
Doing that, just pretend it's part of whatever face and you pick that arbitrary, then that works fine too.
This is a complete question. It's just the average of data on one side of the divider.
I'm sorry. My problem with the edge is that to me it didn't seem to be a clean-cut way to decide which will be the big bus phase, because the two phases have different equations. Actually, I have tried trying to extend one phase and neglecting the other at the edge, and it doesn't work. You mean the... You want me to average these two points and get this point?
There may be some combination of equations that you can try,
but
you can go smoothly from one to the other, but that's not what you want.
But you can update. You can just pretend that, you know, the edge is part of the face. That would work. Then you have an independent result.
Actually, I have tried it, and what I have found is that whatever wants to be boundary data or free data on a face, I must not specify that in any other. I must not try to compute it with an equation on the edge. I must leave it free. For this, now it's fine a different thing. Let me tell you something. I do know how to do. If I have, for example, let's forget about the cube. Think about one direction still being periodic, and so you do this problem. And I know how to do this. It's an easy case. It's a subcase of the cube. What I don't know how to do is, for example, if I do this thing. This edge, I have no way to do that. Let me delete one of the dimensions. Yes. So this is the periodic direction. I know how to do this problem. I have tried it and it works. What I don't know how to do is this problem. This point blows on me. And I have no idea. I have tried lots of things. I have tried to specify four functions, two functions, three functions, one. I don't know how to do that. I think it's fine a difference. I'm not sure. Maybe somebody can come up. Yes.
I'm just wondering sort of why you have to start from the beginning of this problem. I mean, in some gauge, the linearized Einstein equations are basically wave equations. And one knows how to write the wave equation and an initial boundary value problem where everything's hyperbolic and there are rules for what you're allowed to specify on the timeline boundary. So is there any reason why...
So there's no rules about why it's a stable finite system?
Yeah, there is.
Well, the way in general...
For the wave equation, there is.
No,
but
The wave equation is book. Okay, it's simple, but now it's aiming towards the general case. So this is trying to do the most general possible thing in just in linear context.
So you don't want to tie your gauge. I mean, there are gauges, harmonic gauges, which you can get, and so the wave is a wave equation. So that ties your gauge, and you lost all your gauge freedom that maybe you wanted to use for something else.
No, we have tried on this one system. We said that this is one of the simplest. Why don't we try to fix it? Mm-hmm. This was the idea, basically.
The motivation is basically to use the AD control in the other 6 slides. That's why you want to get the face to work. Fine. If you're going to a harmonic gauge, then yes, it will be 5, 6 wave equations and it's crazy there. You have some problems.
A bit puzzled over the custom questions because when I agree with you, you have this
on each phase to Q. And you can give anything you want. In particular, you could give what you get from the other phase and not just give like five free data on at the very corner.
It's not saying he can give anything he wants. He's saying he wants to give only the transfer price of three.
Oh. Right. But I mean, at the very edge, he can find
the corner.
At the corner,
I'm giving five free data.
Right, but as Carson was saying, maybe you can just read it from the and just think the space and get information from there.
Maybe you can't do that, because you get data and a human space from variables, you don't need derivatives for all the variables.
That is my problem, yes.
Yet you don't have the variables for those derivatives.
That is why I felt I must treat edges and corners differently. I'm not saying it's a unique solution, and actually I'm not confident that if I did this cube for 20,000 costing times, it would not blow in me with the edges and corners, because it is different. Yes, that's my point as well. Yeah, but I just didn't want to spend too much time on the cube problem, because that is not my, how should I say, I want matching, and that is not matching. At least, most likely, it wants to be a matching of true spheres. If you want to do matching, matching, if you can set up and if you can make it work, would be a consistent way of doing things, we believe.
Yeah,
the CCM matching, yes. This is the reason, this part of the reason why we want to do that. Now, the reason you cannot do CCM matching using the faces and the edges in a trivial way is the coordinate transformation, I don't know.
So I would like to come back to this point. What do we know about the way the phase is?
Well, I mean, we know ways of doing it, but it's certainly not true. I don't think we know if they're all possible methods, stepping in the proper ways.
For a method of line scheme.
There's this treatment in Price's book where it's basically like a sort of form, and the idea is, roughly speaking, there's sort of ingoing characteristics of and outgoing characteristics of, and you're allowed to set one to be anything you want, and you're not allowed to do anything at all.
But that's somewhat independent of then how you difference. The equations, right? So there's some different things. For example, you consider variation on a condition, right? Then there's some stable discretization and some unstable discretization.
Right, you just take the relaxation equation and just violate the CFL condition. Yeah, that equation is pretty well understood, but you can go ahead and do a bad numerical implementation.
For the six order treatments, the numbers you need are already one line long. You need about 10 numbers as coefficients, each of it is a one line long number divided by alpha one line long number. I think that just you want to have a table for six orders or fourth orders, then that's what you have to do.
Just one more remark, which coming back to this work, which is a mystery to me, is that none of these sets of constraints work with radiation condition, and I don't know why. I cannot do a Sommerfeld, outgoing Sommerfeld on the TT components. If I do that, it blows. So any input is welcome, please.
You should catch me afterwards and talk about interpolation.
Oh, yes, sure, yeah.
Thank you, speaker.